I will just be here and I'll do anything I'm told because then it's not my responsibility.
Interface. Not the same questions, not the same answers.
Hello, I'm Brad Johnson, and welcome to Interface, presented by the STOA Foundation, a not-for-profit organization dedicated to the advancement of thoughtful and sincere Christian dialogue. Interface itself is a weekly examination of Christian perspectives on theology, philosophy, ethics, and culture. Each week, it's hosted by Adam Ayers, the founder of the STOA Foundation and the pastor of Disciples Church, and peopled with various guests from week to week. And this week, the people that we've peopled it with are Tom Dunn, a frequent guest on Interface. Welcome, Tom.
Good to be here.
And John Lindsay, a first-time guest on Interface. Welcome, John.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
The last time we were together here, we were talking about authority and the role of authority in the church in the life of the individual believer. Near the end of the show, Adam, you had mentioned that you don't want to go so far as to abdicate all responsibility for your own actions by saying, well, somebody else told me to do that. And so let's pick up that thought today, maybe finding out where the balance is. How much should I submit to authority? Where does one's responsibility lie in submission to authority? How much am I actually responsible for in my own life if somebody tells me to do something?
To roll the dialogue back just a little bit, one hears as soon as there is the beginnings of a dialogue about authority issues, one almost always hears an argument, what about cults? What about aberrant sects? And what about movements that are oppressive and offensive and denigrating and harmful? Now, I think we have to recognize and at least own the fact that this is, at its very base, a situational ethics sort of a question. And we have to own whether or not we are willing to begin to move into situational ethics in the way that we ground our Christian doctrine. For example, and I'm not making a statement one way or the other, I'm just talking about the propensity of opinion within the Christian community on, say, a pro-life issue, right? There will be, often, when a pro-life stance is taken, the argument will be raised against it. Yes, but what about the case where a 12-year-old girl is incestuously raped and is pregnant and the pregnancy is life-threatening? And immediately Christians, in general, in the evangelical community, will jump up and down and say, one cannot use an abusive situation which violates the basic situation, the normative situation, as the ground for determining policy. Yet when it comes to authority issues, immediately what we do, we say, yes, but what about the aberrant situation where someone has abused authority or abused doctrine and somehow make that the ground for determining our normative policy on authority? You see, that's like saying, in effect, well, there are cases where parents abuse their children. Therefore, one should never give parents authority over their children because some children are abused. Therefore, in the rare cases, and the very fact that they are abused shows that it's aberrant, because there are some children who are abused by their parents, parental authority is therefore not valid. And those kinds of issues come up when we begin to address these in church. What about the case where the one person in authority is destroying their congregation or their flock or leading them astray?
Right.
And this is like a logical fallacy of an unwarranted distribution. Mm. What happens is, because of the fear of the one exception, the great majority of Christians end up sitting in their pews saying, I am afraid of my pastor, that he's going to lead me astray, mm-hmm. that he's going to be abusive, and I have to always be on the watch to make sure that he is not. Yet the vast majority of pastors, you know, and I say this, yes, I have a vested interest in this. I am a pastor, you know. So all of you out there, believe me, listen to my voice. You're getting sleepy. No, see, I have a vested interest in this as a pastor, but still, the pastors that I know of, the vast majority are deeply concerned for the well-being of their flocks, deeply concerned that their people are right in their doctrines, right in their life behaviors. They wouldn't be pastors otherwise. It is the rare exception. And typically you hear appeals to, for example, the Jim Jones.
Right. Mm-hmm.
How long ago was the Jim Jones case?
15 years ago?
Yeah,
15, 20 years ago, I think, almost. It was late 70s, right? Here is a situation where we're appealing to a precedent 20 years previous, which is the one exception.
Well.
And trying to build policy on that.
David Koresh.
Yeah, David Koresh, too.
A little more recent.
A little more recent. That's true, too. Now, how many members are there in congregations across the United States?
Right.
And so maybe you have a case every 15 years, every 20 years. Now take, for example, how many families are there? And yet how many cases of abuse are there? Does that then make parenting wrong?
The old adage that one or two bridges falling make more noise than 1,000 standing.
Yes, good point. So before we even get into the discussion, I think first we have to own what are going to be the protocols and the ground of our reasoning. Will we argue and really capitulate to a situational ethics point of view? If so, we're going to need to carry that across the board in many, many ethical situations and begin to make exceptions.
So are you saying that that's what you find then on a pretty regular basis, is that these sort of authority issues are based on situational ethics?
Well, Brad, what I find is that we use inconsistent criteria. That when a situation is uncomfortable for us, say, for example, the authority of the church, we are willing to use situational ethics to justify our position. But we've really already determined a position that authority is bad. And yet when a position is one that is comfortable to us, say the evangelical position on the pro-life movement, we are uncomfortable with applying situational ethics. So what we need to do in going into this is to say, let's look for truth. Should Christians or should not Christians be under authority? And we can look at the exceptions once we have determined what is normative.
And look at them as exceptions.
Yes. See them as exceptions rather than see them as the ground for policymaking.
You know, many people from outside of the Christian community that come down on the idea of submission to an authority like a pastor. These same people, and I know them personally in my own life, are more than happy to submit their thoughts to a psychoanalyst and to modify their behaviors according to what the psychoanalyst will tell them to do, or submit their life to a guru or some kind of spiritual advisor and modify their behaviors or thoughts according to what this person will tell them to do.
Or, even more so, the boss at their work. Maybe for financial gain, they're willing to make this capitulation of self and volition.
Right.
Or even more so, their physician, their accountant, their lawyer. In each of these, we are willing to recognize the expertise of someone in their field. It comes to spirituality, and all of a sudden, no, the guy up there is not the expert. Never mind that this is a field in which typically we demand a high degree of education, many years of experience.
Not to mention divine calling.
Yes. Not to mention divine calling.
So what is our responsibility as far as monitoring the state of our submission to this authority or to these various and sundry authorities? I mean, if we put ourselves in the position of being the monitor of the degree of our submission, then are we even really submissive at that point? You know, we're judging, well, I'll be submissive to this as long as it looks right. And is that part of our responsibility as a Christian to be the watchdogs to make sure that those we are in submission to are on the straight line? Are we even in a position to know?
I think that's a little bit like saying, is my physician giving me right health care?
Right.
It's a very difficult position to take. And then to determine one's own course of therapy would also be a very difficult, or like you say, psychoanalysis or psychology or counseling or whatever. Now, and here's to get back to our original topic. There are some persons, say, counselees, hypochondriacs, see, with our finances, with law, with any of these things, that are the exception, that are aberrant in that there is a contract of saying, I will not take any responsibility for my life, but I will capitulate all of this responsibility to another. And there are many, many social contracts in our lives. We deal very much on a transactional social contract kind of a basis. So there is, for example, a social contract of politeness that says, I won't notice that you have a bad haircut, but you're not allowed to say anything about my ugly tie, you see? And there are these different trade-offs. In the church, it's very often, I won't notice your immoral behavior as long as you will yield to me a certain kind of a social standing. And there's a trade-off often that happens in churches where the congregants will yield responsibility to the minister to be the only determinant of movement in return for the abdication of responsibility. See, so they yield volition. We will turn you into a demigod if you will absolve us from all of our responsibility. And this is like a Koresh or a, this is the exception. But more often, what tends to happen is that there is a contract that says, you are our employee, we hire you, we assess you, we set boards over you, and you will do what we say. So if you hire somebody to be your spiritual authority, and then you're the spiritual authority over them, what do you think they're going to tell you? Because as soon as the pastor starts telling elder boards or deacon boards or congregants what they don't want to hear, what happens? They get fired.
Yeah.
So now if you set up a situation where, in effect, you can write the law books that determine your behavior, what will happen? You'll end up gravitating to a situation where you simply over and over reconfirm yourself.
Who then in a church is a pastor responsible to as far as authority structure?
I would say, to use the words of James, desire not to be many masters, knowing that we shall receive a greater condemnation. And what it boils down to is that you will answer to God. And if that is not enough for a congregant, that somebody will face judgment. Who do parents answer to?
You know, Adam, on a lesser level, it's a common thing in churches in this area. By this area, I mean like Southern California. The mentality of, hey, I show up, I'm getting fed by this church, I'm getting fed by the pastor, and hey, you know, I give my tithe. What more do you want from me? You know, I show up, and it's your job to feed me, and if I'm not getting fed here, I'm going to go to this church down the road. And so in a smaller way, personal responsibility for not only your own growth in Christ, but for the growth of the body that you're a part of is out the window. Just because there's another church that you can go down the road to that will satisfy your whims or whatever.
Mm-hmm. That's a very individualist mentality. And again, it does. It takes the situation of worship, which is the giving of service to God. In fact, the Hebrew word for worship is the same for work or service. It is that which you yield to a boss. So when we worship, we are yielding something to the Lord, yet most often we come into our congregation situations in order to be the one to whom resources yielded. And we set up a social contract which says, I buy information, I buy religious instruction. I hire someone to be my religious instructor like we hire a personal trainer. But the situation that appears to be more in Scripture is that it is not so much that a minister or an elder or a leader of a congregation is a personal trainer, but is more of a coach of a team. You see the difference? An athlete on a team needs to play in the role that they're assigned and according to the overall vision of the coach, whereas we tend to like personal trainers. I have a goal that I want to accomplish for my body. Now I hire you to make that happen.
And one carries the connotation, the personal trainer, of
you
doing much less and the trainer making you work. Whereas the athlete who's a member of a team with the like the coach as a pastor, you're already working on a daily basis to being strong so that you can be a contributing member of the team.
Yeah, and you either make the tryout or you don't.
Right.
And you bring up an interesting point, Tom. In the situation where one is willing to abdicate responsibility, it's the same thing of saying, well, the personal trainer didn't call me. The personal trainer instructed you to do what you need to do, you know, and it's this idea, I don't have enough will for myself, therefore I will hire you to have not only will for yourself, but will for me. And so I can capitulate my growth to you. What I find most often with pastors is that what they would instruct their congregations authoritatively to do is to be responsible about their spiritual growth. But see, we don't like that. See, we want them either to be servants or to be dictators where we don't have to grow. See, this is logical fallacy of the either or. This is what Paul tends to do. He tends to tell congregations, look, you guys need to grow. That is an authoritative statement, and they need to obey that. But it's either, well, make me do my homework, make me grow. I sit here and you make me grow, and you make all the decisions for me. Or it is, you can't tell me what to do. But the situation that you find Paul saying, and many, many of the biblical sources, is, for example, if someone were to say, look, you make a choice. You pursue. This is what I'm telling you to do. I don't want to make a choice. I'm telling you authoritatively, make a choice. Make a choice to grow. Make a choice to obey. which is neither the complete, and this is typically we say, well, what is it? Either you abdicate responsibility totally, or you have full responsibility and the other person is just a lackey. No, there is an organic synergy between these two, and it's a fallacy to think it must polarize one way or the other. Because, I mean, Paul says, hey, mark those which walk so as you have us for an example, and work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. These are things that he tells the congregants to do.
So what about an answer then to those who would posit, what about people in what we would consider cults or aberrant movements that where somebody's exercising incredible control over them, you know, to where it's very demeaning or bad for them psychologically or physically?
I would say this. In Gethsemane, Christ said, if it be possible, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done. How did it end up for him?
Drank from it.
And what happened to his life?
It was destroyed.
It was destroyed. So can we make the argument that the destruction of someone's life necessitates that the command was bad?
Adam, if I may play devil's advocate here, no pun intended. In your opinion, to what extent should a congregant, because of their own responsibility over their own growth, be a watchdog over what is coming from the pulpit? Like the Jim Jones thing, for example. Let's say someone is a Bible-believing, Spirit-filled, to use those words that fly around the church, Bible-believing, Spirit-filled Christian who was attending Jim Jones's church. Jim Jones says, hey, let's go off to Guyana and drink Kool-Aid and kill ourselves. I mean, at what point does the congregant say, oh, that's not in the Bible, that's wrong, I'm out of here? I mean, not that that, I mean, the Jim Jones thing isn't happening all the time in every church, but to what extent should the congregant watchdog what is happening?
Well, of course, there's a place where there is a call to disobedience. For example, your life is not your own, you are bought with a price. Therefore, if someone says, drink cyanide Kool-Aid, it is, we must obey God rather than men. It's the same thing that the apostles' response to the priesthood, which was in authority in Jerusalem, they said, you know, we have a mandate to share the gospel. We cannot disobey. This is like, mom said this, dad said that, you know, what do we do? In that, really, honestly, it is both a win-win and a lose-lose. You cannot help but disobey something, but at the same time, you cannot help but obey something. So there are situations like drinking cyanide where you say, my life is not my own, I don't have the right to drink cyanide, even though you told me to. Okay, I don't have the right to do that, so I must refrain. But the greatest kind of support that you can give for someone is to give them truth. So enter into dialogue with the authorities at your church. Enter into dialogue with the elders, with the pastors, those kinds of things. And what you'll probably find is that you're asked to leave if you're not supposed to be there. You see? But the true support says, I will enter into dialogue with you all the time. I will continue to talk to you. I, as a pastor, want to know the things around my congregants' hearts.
Right.
I want them to say, you know what? I really had a problem with what you said on Sunday, or this is my experience. I feel like I'm being browbeaten in this church. I need to let you know this as my pastor. I need to let you know that I'm feeling beaten. But right. See, there's this idea that we keep silence. We don't enter into dialogue, and it's the only options are stay there and be silent or walk out.
To the church down the street.
To the church down the street. So for example, we'll take an extreme situation. A Nazi guard at Dachau. Okay, he cannot give the excuse, I was only following orders. That's not appropriate. He's doing crimes against humanity. But he can't say, would they kill me if I said something? That doesn't work either. Yet he's not the one who is able to give orders, correct?
Right.
So what he can do is say, you know what, I am here. I am still in the army. I know the crimes for disobedience to orders are death. And so I will be martyred.
Right.
He doesn't desert necessarily. He gets martyred. That's always been the Christian option.
Mm-hmm.
When faced with inappropriate authority, to stand up, say something there to that authority. Particularly, we follow the Matthew 18 thing. If you see a brother who's overtaken in something, go to them individually, go with others, you know, go with elders. Follow this process, but we never follow that in the church. Someone never follows that with a pastor. They don't go to him individually first. They go to everybody but him.
Right. And how many people pray for their pastor that God would lead him so that he could lead others.
Mm-hmm. So there are fairly clear protocols about if you see someone overtaken in fault, restore such a one in spirit of meekness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. We're supposed to enter into these dialogues, but the problem is our first option is almost always either absolute non-entity, I will just be here and I'll do anything I'm told because then it's not my responsibility. Or to say, I'm out of here. Or to say, he's out of here. And those are the same kinds of all or nothing options we tend to take into our marriages, into our parenting, into our businesses, all of these things.
Right.
So our responsibility is to work it out.
Yeah. Love.
Mm-hmm.
See? Endeavor to keep the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace. That's our mandate. Love believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love's not arrogant. Love doesn't seek its own way. See, love doesn't rejoice in evil. Love rejoices in the truth. He's talking to a congregation when he says that, that is divided over issues and is divided over who is the authority in their lives.
So there is, if there is a point, like you said, where disobedience is what we're called to do, if we see something abusive like, you know, drinking Kool-Aid or what have you, doesn't that sort of throw mud in the water and gray the line a bit where we can bring that down to the level of, well, you know, that holy laughter, that doesn't seem right. I'm going to leave this church, or that baptism of infants or what have you. Is there any line that we have?
I believe there is a necessary line. But I believe that what we have to do in order to find that line is to make sure that we are aware that either way, we are not our own. And we are not the determinant of what that line is. But, for example, with Peter seeing the sheet full of unclean stuff coming down from heaven and the voice of the Lord saying, "Rise, Peter, kill and eat." And he's like, no, I have a biblical textual precedent not to do this. Does he question his experience or does he question the precedent? What's the determination that he comes to? He comes to the determination, I am convinced that the Lord himself has told me. Therefore, I must obey. And when it comes down to those situations, when you do see persons in the Bible disobeying, it's because they are absolutely convinced that they have personally received revelation from God. It's not that they have utilized reason, organized their data, and come to a conclusion. It is that they have been moved and they are compelled. They say, God makes us, God help us, but God makes us do this. And in the same way, if we are to say, I am in a place, because even Jesus, like we saw last week, even Jesus said, obey the Pharisees for they sit in Moses' seat, which is a radical position to tell his disciples to obey the Pharisees who are opposing him. And the people that he says, you lay burdens on men's shoulders too grievous to be borne and you don't lift a finger, and you make them twice the child of hell as yourself. And then he says, but obey them, but don't be like them. And I think what has to happen is that if we are going to say we will disobey, then we have to be absolutely convinced that it is God himself who has brought us to that place. And then we have to say, God, you know, on you I lay my life. Either you'll take me here or I'm had. I'm had because I'm doing something that is very, very shaky, stepping out here and saying, you have compelled me to do this. And of course that brings up the whole question, so who was in authority when Jesus said that? Was it the priests? Was it the Pharisees? Was it Jesus? What is the authority that's operating there? And that's a question we have to carry into our congregations too. So who is the authority here? Who is it that I'm disobeying or who is it that I am obeying? Especially in an egalitarian, democratic society.
Well, there's certainly some fuel for conversations, I think. Until our next show comes up, we'll pick up this same line of thought on the next show. In the meantime, thank you very much for being here, Adam, Tom Dunn, and John Lindsay. We'd like to thank Chris Holawaty, our engineer. We'd like to thank Media City Sound for helping to make Interface possible. And thanks to you for listening.
Hi, everybody. This is Adam Ayers. Just a word about the STOA Foundation. I know you hear this term quite a bit. The STOA Foundation derives its name. Actually, it means porch foundation. The STOA was the porch that was out in front of a Greek temple. And that's where people would sit and talk, just kind of like the front porch of the general store in a small town. And that's what the STOA Foundation is all about, having a place and a moment of Christian media where we can sit and talk as genuine inquirers for truth. We believe that this has a significant place in the Christian community right now, that there's a need for a place where persons can talk without trying to accomplish a secondary or tertiary end, where we can just say, what are we, who are we, and what are the issues that actually face our lives. We hope that this is coming to pass in your lives, that we've been able to raise some dialogues that have addressed some thoughts or some concerns of yours, and we'd love to hear from you. We'd like to know what some of your concerns and thoughts are so that we can sit on the porch and talk about them some more.